Next case up is 21-3030 Pickard versus United States. Ms. Bland, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. I represent the plaintiff and appellant in this matter, Terry Pickard. And this case involves an issue of the interpretation of Kansas statute KSA 60-3412. That's a statute that seeks to limit the use of professional witnesses in medical malpractice cases. In essence, the Kansas courts want to avoid having people who spend most of their time testifying as experts. And the statute seeks to accomplish that by imposing a 50% rule that people serving as experts need to spend 50% of their professional time devoted to actual clinical practice. Now, plaintiffs designated Dr. Joel Bartfield, an emergency room physician, as their expert in this case, and defendant moved for summary judgment, arguing that Dr. Bartfield doesn't spend 50% of his professional time devoted to clinical practice. But under Kansas law, an expert meets the 50% requirement if 50% or more of his time is devoted to either direct patient care or indirect patient care. And Kansas courts have recognized, starting with the decision in Indoor v. Bolander, that indirect patient care can include a variety of activities. Patient care should not be limited to a physical presence or bedside requirement. It can include...
But indirect patient care still has to be, under Kansas law, directed toward a specific medical issue of a specific patient, of somebody's. Don't you agree?
I do agree that patient care does need to be directed towards a specific patient, Your Honor. But I think the Kansas cases have recognized that the activities pertaining to that care can include a variety. In Dawson v. Prager, the Kansas Supreme Court recognized that time spent consulting, supervising, admitting patients, and other various duties can all be patient care. In Schlaker v. Kaplan, more recently, the Kansas Supreme Court expanded on that notion, saying that, emphasizing patient care isn't limited to face-to-face care. It includes advising, addressing care, and importantly for this case, it includes time spent teaching medical residents. In that case, the court recognized that activities which facilitate patient care are part of indirect patient care, and again emphasize that time spent supervising and consulting medical residents is part of that care.
As they relate to specific patients. Well, what about Dr. Bartfield talking about basically consulting after the fact, that in terms of allowing these residents to be better in solving particular issues going forward, is that considered actual clinical practice under Kansas law?
Pursuant to the testimony in this case, I believe, yes, Your Honor, and I think you've hit the crux of the matter. As I read the district court's opinion, it imposed a rule basically that it would not consider any review of patient care. I believe Dr. Bartfield testified in detail that when he was working with medical students and residents, even if he wasn't there with them while they were performing a test, taking a patient history, performing an exam, he would review the work they did for that specific patient.
And well, I believe it's the word "for" that gets me, because this is what I could envision are two scenarios, and I think this is what the district court got at. And this is what Schlaker, I guess, was dealing with, one of these scenarios. You can have a scenario in which the doctor is doing research for or consulting with the resident in real time being contemporaneously with deciding what care is appropriate for that particular patient. That's one scenario. The other scenario is resident treated ex-patient, did their best to help ex-patient. Then they go talk to Dr. Bartfield, and Dr. Bartfield says, well, you did it 90% right. This 10%, you could have done better to be optimally good. Going forward, go forth and do that 10%. That scenario, the second one, is that actual clinical practice in your view?
If it's solely a review after patient of the cure is completely terminated and it's just a teaching capacity, maybe not. But I don't think that's what Dr. Bartfield testified to in this case. I think what he testified to is that during the course of care, it might have been a medical student or a resident who was there at the patient's bedside taking the history, you know, doing the exam. But Dr. Bartfield would then review that work with respect to the care of that specific patient.
With respect to the ongoing care of that patient.
Correct, Your Honor.
And what? And give me your best portion of the record that talks about Dr. Barfield providing ongoing care consultation to patients.
I don't know that he used the word ongoing, Your Honor. He was repeatedly asked about whether the work he was doing with residents or medical students pertained to specific patients. That was the focus of the hearing. And he repeatedly testified, I would advise them with respect to the care of specific patients. I don't know that he actually used the word ongoing, Your Honor, but I think that was the clear implication of his testimony.
Well, the concern here, and this gets to the heart of the matter, the concern here is one can say, yes, it was with respect to specific patients, but if it's not with respect to ongoing patient care, that is a distinct matter. In other words, he may make this resident a better doctor, and so in the aggregate, all patients may benefit, but that is a distinct thing, is it not? Do you agree, from providing consultation research in the Schlaker context as it relates to the ongoing care of a specific patient?
Again, if the evidence in this case were that there were solely review of patients, the patient's already left the hospital, they're long gone, and he's just going over with the resident how that care went, I would agree. But I don't think that is what his testimony was, Your Honor. I believe he was testifying about reviewing what the residents and the medical students had done while they were still caring for patients. And in that, and again, I think it's important to keep in mind, this is all in the context of a teaching facility. You know, it's...
Well, so is Schlaker. And I mean, that the okay, if I understand, all right then. So it seems to me, there would appear to be that there's no dispute on what the law is. Well, if that's true, your comment about the fact that it has to be a particular patient, has to be ongoing care, it seems to me that's the district court's view too. So the question is how the district court interpreted Dr. Barfield's testimony. Doesn't that create an issue of clear error in terms of, to the extent that the district court made a finding as to how it interpreted his testimony? Wouldn't we review that for whether that was a clearly erroneous interpretation?
Your Honor, I think it's actually an issue of law. If you look at the district court's ruling, the district court concluded that Dr. Barfield only spent 12 to 13 hours of his time engaged in patient care. Clearly on this record, that's the time that he spent directly providing care in the ER. So that's the only care that the district court gave Dr. Barfield credit for. Basically, it disregarded everything else he did and said none of the other work he did was patient care. So, and in the court's own words, again, the court stated that it believed the statute required present care of a particular patient. I think that's essentially a bedside requirement, Your Honor. What the court is saying is if you're there beside the patient providing care, it's patient care.
But it didn't say that. Why doesn't present care mean ongoing care, which we just talked about?
Well, I take it is more in the essence of being there with the patient, Your Honor. But again, part of the reason I interpret it that way is because we know that the court said he only spent 12 to 13 hours of his time in patient care. And clearly from this record, that is solely the time that he spent directly in the ER at a patient's bedside. So it does seem that was the district court's focus.
Didn't Dr. Barfield, I believe it was in his testimony at the evidentiary hearing, didn't he flat out say he spent 12 to 15 hours providing care?
When he was asked a series of questions from the court, which asked him to exclude time that he spent reviewing what residents and medical students had done, yes. But again, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Please go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's in the context of a teaching facility. Again, think of it this way. Look at the flip side of the situation. If a medical student or a resident provided care to a patient and Dr. Barfield did not review what they did, and then they had a bad outcome, something went seriously wrong, Dr. Barfield would be held accountable for that ineffective patient care. So clearly, reviewing what a medical student or a resident has done is an integral part of patient care in a teaching facility. Otherwise, we would just be operating under a standard where Dr. Barfield will just say, we'll assume that the medical students and the residents always do the right thing.
I think that's a false dichotomy. As we talked about, you could have a scenario where the review is designed to ensure, number one, that the resident is better going forward. Why isn't there a distinction between review of the sort that Dr. Barfield did and the real-time review that, I mean, real-time instruction of Schleicher, where, I mean, he's in the operating room. He said his operating room is, I think he said his classroom. So he's in there and he's cutting on a particular patient, providing care to the particular patient. And part of that is his instruction to the resident. Isn't that a distinct thing from after the fact saying here, this is what you did, this is how you should have done it, this was okay?
Actually, in Schleicher, Your Honor, the expert testified that he spent 25% of his time devoted to direct care. So I would assume that's the time he's in the operating room.
Well, he also talked about meeting particular patients, I think, two times a week. It was either 2 days or 1.5 days a week. He met specific patients, new patients, and other patients.
In Schleicher, the court, and I'm just glancing at the opinion, the court stated that about 25% of time was spent in direct clinical activity. So I'm assuming visiting with patients is part of that activity. It's not, maybe I'm misreading Schleicher, but they also talked about 75% of his time spent in various efforts, including his teaching efforts.
And teaching where his operating room was his classroom. That was the phrase he used. He said he taught in terms of, as we think of, giving lectures twice a year. That's it. Otherwise, his operating room was his classroom.
I don't believe the expert in Schleicher spent, I think Schleicher indicated that 25% of the expert's time. I don't think the expert spent that entire 80 to 90 hours in the operating room, Your Honor. But in this case, again, looking at what Dr. Barfield was doing in the context of working with medical students and residents, I think it was an integral part of care. I don't know whether he used the word ongoing, but if you read through the transcript, I think because he was asked again and again, he would talk about advising them and he would be asked, was that with respect to the care of a specific patient? And he would say, yes. I think clearly Dr. Barfield understand that as asking about while the care was being provided. He might not have been there in the room with the patient, but he was overseeing. Under the words of the Kansas cases, he was supervising the medical residents and medical students.
Well, let's assume that it could have had either meaning. I mean, if the question was that in regard to a specific patient? And he says, yes. That could mean, yes, while the patient was still under our care. Or it could mean, no, patient's long gone, but yes, I was giving after-the-fact advice to future medical people based on care of a specific patient. So at most, then, we have an ambiguity. The district court made a factual finding of which of those two ambiguous prongs to choose. So don't you have a burden, then, of proving to us under factual error that there was a clear error before we could reverse the district court?
If you look at it from that factual perspective, I would suggest to the court, we know the district court in its ruling stated that only 12 to 13 hours of Dr. Barfield's time was patient care. And we know, based on the testimony, that's talking about direct patient care in the ER. So in essence, the district court was saying not one other moment of his time was devoted to patient care in any way. I mean, I don't see how you can reach any other conclusion when the district court, its conclusion speaks in terms of 12 to 13 hours, which was the time he spent at patient's bedside in the ER. So maybe there's an ambiguity, but I don't think there's any ambiguity that the district court gave no credit whatsoever to any time that he spent other than the time that he spent in the ER. I see that I have about a minute left. I would ask to reserve that for rebuttal if I could.
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the court, Michelle Jacobs on behalf of the United States. I think before we go too far, the most important thing to do is to correct the record. If the court has an opportunity to go through and read through the transcript of the hearing with the court, Dr. Barfield testified that he spends 8 hours a week in the ER. That was 20% of his time, 1 day a week. Then he went on to talk about he spends another 5 to 6 hours critiquing care. And it's that time that the court determined was actually spent in actual patient care. So it wasn't just That 13 hours that the court talks about wasn't just emergency room care. It was emergency room care. And quite frankly, Dr. Bartfield, when specifically asked how much of your work week is spent in participating or advising on ongoing care, it was Dr. Bartfield that testified it was 12 to 15 hours a week. He also included that this included his time teaching and meetings, critiquing care, and the time spent in the emergency room and direct patient care. The court then took that information and made a determination that Dr. Bartfield did not practice 50% of the time. When Dr. Bartfield testified about his ongoing role with advising residents and supervising residents, he made it very clear to the district court that that amount of time is spent on overseeing training, interfacing with the medical system, responsible to making sure that the medical students are well supervised, well communicated with, respectful of nurses, respectful of family, learning how to deliver bad news. And Dr. Bartfield admitted that this quality oversight does not affect the care of ongoing patient care, but it's important for these medical residents to learn for future application and as they act as doctors.
And so when Dr. Bartfield was saying 12 to 15 hours, he was not talking about this latter category of activity.
He was not. And in fact, his testimony got a little confusing because at some point he says, I spend 20% of my time advising residents on care provided to a particular patient. But then he goes back to specify that this 20% of his time is only related to his time related to advising the patients. It's not 20% of all of his time. And I think that plaintiffs try to use that 20% plus the 20% plus that time critiquing care to say, oh, he works more than 50%. But Dr. Bartfield specified that only 20% of his time advising residents actually has to do with patient care. Otherwise, it's all of this quality oversight, all of this learning how to work the systems, operate within the hospital, be respectful of nurses, interface with nurses. And he qualified that in his testimony, that is different than ongoing care.
I think it's not a controversial statement to say that Dr. Bartfield's testimony at various points, be it his affidavit or his evidentiary hearing testimony, was less than crystalline. And so, I mean, at the end of the day, in terms of who gets when the determination is made, what did he mean? Isn't that entitled? What's the standard of review that governs our evaluation of the district court's determination of what he meant?
Sure. And I'm going to have 2 points on that. The first one is, it was Dr. Bartfield's own testimony that he said 12 to 15 hours are spent in participating or advising on ongoing care. And that's in his hearing testimony. So I would encourage the court to look at that.
Yes, but the reason we had an evidentiary hearing was the confusion in his affidavit, and the district court felt the need to have that hearing. So the point I'm making is, and you alluded to the fact earlier, he had some ambiguity. So I'm just trying to say, let's assume, spot me, that there is some ambiguity in his testimony. Well, then what standard do we use to evaluate the district court's resolution of that ambiguity?
Well, this court should look at whether or not the district court abused their discretion in considering whether or not Dr. Bartfield was qualified to participate as an expert. And that is set out under 603412 in terms of what the district court needed to determine as to whether or not he qualified as an expert.
I get that. But as it relates to the factual findings, that's clearly erroneous standard of review, is it not?
It's an abuse of discretion, Your Honor.
Well, within the scope of an abuse of discretion review, those specific findings are reviewed for clear error, are they not?
Yes.
Well, let me ask you a question about this waiver argument. Surely you're not saying that the fact that he spends most of his brief talking about the motion to strike, and yet he didn't mention specifically his motion to strike in the issues statement. What basis do you have to say that's waiver?
Well, Your Honor, the whole issue with waiver is that the opposing party should be on notice as to what the issues are raised, and that wasn't raised in the
look at his brief. He talks about a motion to strike, does he not?
He does once he gets to the brief at some point, but he's still, this is postured still as a review of summary judgment. And
well, it was all part of the context of summary judgment. You cannot read that brief. Impossible for you to read that brief without saying that the motion to strike was the essence of the complaint here.
I'm sorry, I don't think I understood your question, or maybe I didn't hear it
correctly. I'm just having trouble saying, you're saying that he waived it or didn't raise it because he didn't put it into a heading.
And that was just an argument that was raised, Your Honor, but quite frankly, we would encourage the court to actually address the arguments that are raised. I think that has more finality, and that addresses the claims that are before the court as opposed to that claim. The other issue that's come up, and opposing counsel stated it a couple times, and he talked about direct patient care and indirect patient care and whether or not the care facilitates. All of those terms are terms of art that have not been defined by any of the Kansas cases looking at this statute. And quite frankly, it appears that opposing counsel wants this court to almost define those or interpret those. And the district court in this case wasn't asked to define those or interpret those. The district court in this case was simply asked to apply the facts of Dr. Bartfield's time that he spent to this statute.
Well, the district court was asked to interpret Kansas law, though, right? And determine what does it mean to be involved in actual clinical practice and to discern what the through line is on these cases, right?
Interpret as the facts apply to the law. Yes, Your Honor. And I just
want to interpret what the standard is. I mean, that, yes. You get that from the cases, right?
Yes. And I just feel like the district court here was in a little bit of a different posture than the courts in either Endorf or Schleilacher or Dawson, and that they were actually trying to interpret and define what it means for actual patient care. We weren't in that situation in this case. What's important about all those prior cases that we've talked about is that those cases really didn't define maybe direct patient care or indirect patient care or whether or not it facilitates care. Instead, the courts did exactly what Judge Lundstrom did in this case, and that was look at the activities, look at the percentage or the hours of time that each doctor spent in those activities, and then made a determination whether or not those reported activities qualified as actual patient care, whether or not there was specific care delivered to a patient.
Well, whether they qualify turns on what the legal standard is. Are you telling me that you don't think there's a legal dispute here? I mean, because as I understood the position of appellant, he's saying that Judge Lundstrom was misguided in viewing actual clinical practice as meaning bedside care. And if he did mean that, he's arguing that's a legal error. At least that's what I thought he said.
And I agree. That's what I thought he said as well. But if you look through either Judge Lundstrom's opinion, but also more specifically through his questioning and through our questioning of Dr. Bartfield during the hearing, Judge Lundstrom did not advance that. Not once did he talk about whether or not this was at the bedside. I think there was even some questioning that this could be delivered through video, you know, that conversation that went on that addressed those cases. So I do not believe that Judge Lundstrom at all believed that he had to be at the bedside. I think Judge Lundstrom really picked up on the fact that it had to be ongoing patient care for a specific patient. And that goes back to, you know, that conversation about teaching, about whether or not this hospital was a teaching hospital. Clearly, it was a teaching hospital, but there was never any conversation with Dr. Bartfield that he was teaching in a surgical room or he was teaching even at the bedside. Like there was nothing there to for the court to find that his teaching amounted to providing actual patient care to a specific patient. There are additional questions from the court?
Not for me.
Not for me.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. I'm sorry, you're muted, Mr. Flynn.
I apologize, Your Honor. I again want to emphasize that I think it's crucial to consider that this is, we're talking about teaching professionals here. The purpose of the statute is to avoid expert witnesses or professional experts. You would think people who not only practice medicine, but teach it would be exactly the people we would want as experts. And yet if you impose a standard which largely disregards the time that these doctors spend working with residents and medical students, we're going to exclude, in most cases, those very experts. And I don't think that's what was intended. And just glancing back at Schlechter to answer a question we had, in Schlechter, 25% of the doctor's time involved operating time and seeing patients in an outpatient setting. So that was only 25% of his time. The rest of it, that 75%, included that teaching effort and working with residents and fellows, which was what the court focused on in that case. I see my time's up unless there are any further questions.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. Case is submitted.